off the entity. Shout out to Rick, Tom, and everybody over there doing it.
There are times that you can take a 1 watt resistor and dissipate 5 watts and do it for a long period of time without damage. There are other times when you can take a 10 watt resistor, dissipate 5 watts during the day. Because that 10 watt resistor is tucked in the center of a chassis.
So many different cargo vessels now. You had the ATV by European Space Agency, the automatic transfer vehicle. That was the largest of the group. They sent about five of them up. They stay up there for about 6 months before they deorbit them. You got the ones by Japan, the H2, they call them, docking with the space station every now and then. And that docks on the American side. HTV docks on the Russian side. Of course, you've got the Dragon spacecraft going up there every now and then, now with cargo as well, built by SpaceX. And you've got Orbital Sciences Cygnus spacecraft that docks at the space station. So it's going to be an ongoing process. So eventually you have manned craft besides the Russians going up, and they'll be going up probably as early as 2016, but maybe 2017 on the Dragon spacecraft when that's completely qualified manned flight. So the Expedition 38 crew has their hands full. One of the things that they wanted to do that was sent up in the Dragon spacecraft, Cygnus spacecraft in the last month, was to deploy these cube satellites. How are they going to do that? You know, you don't do a spacewalk. You don't fly out and bring the cubes with you and give them a push. It's done from the Kaibo space module attached to the space station. That's the Japanese module. They have an outdoor platform there. They have their own robotic arm and their own little airlock, and eventually they'll put them outside and use a robotic arm to deploy them. The Japanese fellow will do that. Kichi is named it. But they plan on doing that February 6th, but that's been delayed. He had some electronic problems in the Kaibo space module, so he's working on that. That delayed the launch of these things probably until March. But another amateur radio delay they have is... they have an ATV that was put up there by European space agency wanted to have an ATV, amateur TV up there. So they wanted to bring that online, but he had some problems with what he was doing, so that's going to be delayed.
July 4th. The Insight
InSight Mars lander will be landing. Actually, the launch will be also 2016, 2 years, and about 10 months later, it'll be landing on the Mars surface. That's not a rover. But it's got a big drill. It's going to drill into the ground and do all kinds of seismic tests, trying to find out if the planet.
Between all the countries that say we can't claim any part of the moon.
But of course, that was only between certain countries. China wasn't included. And it didn't have anything to do with private corporations. So, interesting part about this whole catalyst system, bringing the private corporations in, into this, is there's not going to be any funding by NASA. NASA's not going to fund these companies. What they're going to do is they're going to allow them to use their facilities. They're going to allow them to duplicate some of their rocket technology. And, of course, NASA's going to guide them through what they need to do. But they're not going to be funded. They're going to be privately funded. NASA is on a skeleton type of budget. They've been cutting their budget. But they're getting around it by these commercial companies getting involved with space program, including now the idea of having private corporations having landing craft built, also being able to put rovers up there and return samples all on their own. And part of the deal is they're going to have to work with private launching companies to do this. For instance, SpaceX or Orbital will take their rockets, either the Antares rocket built by Orbital Sciences or the Falcon 9, now the version 1.1, the upgraded one, built by SpaceX, or maybe even the heavy lift version, which hasn't been tried yet by SpaceX. Essentially, it's three Falcon 9s bolted together, and that will make it the most powerful rocket ever launched to date. And I guess they could put a couple of rovers on the moon and have them return some samples without funding it with taxpayer money. I'm all in favor of this. It sounds like a real good deal. Dick, I'm going to pass it back to you, and if you have any questions, we'll be here. And also, my email is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Anybody wants to contact me. Dick, over to you, K2RIW, TechNet, WS1.
Ready, Pat. Ready, Pat, Paul. Let's see if I got a way to light you.
end with that project, Paul.
N2XJN.
Has he started that installation? WS2N, K2LIW.
Can we in the kitchen, nigga?
Yeah, okay, he was, actually it's been worked on, you know, they have a 2.4 gigahertz antenna outside the Columbus module. So, I mean, in a sense, it has started a long time ago. That was done on one of the EBAs. Now all he's got to do is hook the stuff up. It is an amateur TV. The European group is involved with it. The downlink set up in Europe. It might be Germany, Darmstadt, it might be them, but I don't, that's usually the mission control for that group.
Beautiful. Oh, then it's up.
Dead one's on its shoulder.
Hopefully you're hearing me on A5, Paul. And you're happy that at that 2 degrees your rotator doesn't freeze up. Many of the rotators that act like they're freezing up, what's really going on is the AC electrolytic capacitor has dried out, particularly with the Cornell Dubilier rotators, which is 120 microfarads, 150 volts, the electrolytic capacitor. When they dried out, you got very little torque out because it went from 120 mics down to some lower number. And as such, you think that it's freezing. Yes, the problem did happen more in the wintertime, but almost all of our rotators will rotate through snow, ice, cold, and everything as long as the phase-shifting capacitor is the right number of microfarads. And so in many cases, if you replace the capacitor that used to be in the Cornell Dubilier, like your HAM-Ms and your AR-22s, if you replace that 120 microfarad with a industrial-grade motor start capacitor, then they last for a long time and you get a whole lot of torque out of them. Now, of the astronauts, Paul, and by the way, you're overpowering him very well on 375, and I'm measuring S2 on the input on 375, so he's running up and down the expressway and he can get the eastern input. Of the astronauts that are on the International Space Station, I think you said almost all of them are ham radio operators. KF5LJG has a tech class license. Do you happen to know any of the other call letters of any of the astronauts that are on the space station at this time, Paul? WS2S, H2RIW.
If not all have their amateur radio license. That started, gotta be what, 15 years ago or something. With the International Space Station, after it started to get built and they finally put a ham station on board, everybody wanted that license because they do have free time. They like to talk to people down on Earth as they go over. They have a lot of fun doing that. I think it got busy for that 3-year period after 2003. There was no transmissions. The only thing that was working was the packet. Things like that, but they had 6 people. They dropped it down to 3, and then down to 2 for a while. Had a handful maintaining the place, and just had no time for themselves. That was after they decided wasn't going to be enough supplies going up to the space station because the shuttles weren't going to be running up there. Had to cut back, bring back the 2-man crew. It was a problem for maybe 3 or 4 years. But I think after that, everything got back to normal. So we'll see a lot of hams from the States with the 5 call letter because they all live down in Houston, Texas, where they all train. Back to you.
I'm going to see if I can come through on the same repeater frequency that you did. Looks like I am. How about that? Okay, yes, that's working. Of the hams on the International Space Station, like you say, almost all of them have got a tech license. Do you know any of the other call letters, Paul, besides the KF5LJG, WS2N, K2RIW?
N2XJN.
Track. And it all started actually with across space station. So they had a premiere. The first one was a Russian. He had his license. But he was able to use a call with the U-1 Mir. And the second Russian, he had his license. He used the U-2 Mir. He was going to go around with the 3, 4, 5. Now I think they all use the same thing. They use their own core. I think they Bill, ISS. I forgot, I got brain freeze here, but ISS. Oh, okay, yeah. N1 ISS, something like that. Right.
ISS with quote. So he's getting pretty close. He was starting to overpower you a little bit, Paul. And I think he's also overpowering me a little bit. So he's traveling east is a good guess. I'm hearing him very loud on the input of the eastern machine. Ridiculous that somebody thinks that his station in life, his goal, is to be disruptive, and it gives him a sense of power. Very sad. We shouldn't get angry at the guy. We got to feel sorry for him. Okay. I don't know if anyone else is going to be able to get through on this machine. You and I are aimed right at it. I hope that we set a timeout. Let's see if it did. It did. I wonder if anyone else can get through on the Western input or any other input. I'm going to pass it over to people to see if anyone wants to sign in. K2RIW in the second, listening on at least three frequencies if someone else wants to check in. Give me a call that is a name right now. K2RIW listening. hear you. K2LAW.
Hey, I wonder if you I'm getting down. So, I had a question to Paul. When there is a plan to have a rocket on the moon that was one, and eventually I would like to ask you, do you have a chance to do my email, that one, that was for Cyclotron?
No, I did not have a chance to look at the email, Wes. I was doing a repair of one of my pieces of equipment right up until 2 minutes before the net began. The control box for my rotator, I dropped it on the ground and did damage to it and had to replace the switches inside. So give us a couple words on if I did get a chance to see that email, and I think it's the most recent one. Is it a YouTube video or something like that? N2XJN, K2LIW.
Okay, it looks like I'm coming to I've got into the cyclotron, and give the history into how it works and everything about it, and I found it extremely fascinating. Because people talk about collider and they don't understand what mostly what it's about. And the beginning of the particle accelerator was a cyclotron. And I sent you the complete email with the photographs and it's easy to absorb, and it's a very the family that come, whatever it is. And also I sent it to Paul. I wonder if Paul has a chance to read that article and eventually to see it.
I wonder if you copied that, Paul. WS2N, K2LIW, with Wes. I think what's going on is that 440 and 85 are connected together right now, and the 275 is not operating right now. Maybe it got timed out because of all the extraneous signals on its input. So I think we don't have Paul right now. Let me double check. Yep, we don't have the Eastern input machine, and that's the one he's listening on. Now, you're saying the cyclotron and other kinds of colliders are not being well understood, and I think you're talking about the general public, and I sort of agree with you. Not very many people know why we need a particle accelerator, okay? Particularly one as big and expensive as the CERN LH Large Hadron Collider. Not everyone understands why we need such a big machine. And as I see it, that's the only way to take these individual atoms apart, so to speak, to find out what they consist of. And it takes a lot of focusing and a lot of velocity to penetrate those shells, the outer and the inner shell, the outer shell of electrons and the inner shell of the nucleus, in order to take them apart. And some of these more energetic machines are required because of the strength of the strong source force holding everything together. That's one way I'm guessing at it, if you know what I mean. That was N2X Japan, K2LIW.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, actually, if you imagine that you have a disk sort of the pod, and this pod is doing this call, and then you have a disk inside. And the disk inside is actually cut onto half, creating two inverted Ds. There are one D, and then you have a second D. And then you have a space between those two Ds. And then on the top of the structure, and the bar of the structure, you have the mud. So what is happening is that right in the middle, between the space, between those two beads, that used to be one bead, now you put an iron salt. That could be anything you want, it doesn't have to be radioactive. What is happening is magnetic field will create a rotation of the iron. And the only particles that could be speed up or accelerated are the particles that are charged. So you cannot do it with neutrons. But you can do it with protons, you can do it with electrons, you can do it with atoms. If you wish to, you can do it with cold atoms as well. Now what is happening is you can create a power out of that approximately from 1 to 5 to 10 mega electron volts in some environment. If you want to do that, okay. Now, the first cyclotron was created in 1920s, but that was in Berkeley, and it was a very small one. And somewhere in 1933, there was a first cyclotron that was built. So it's relatively easy to do that. Although, we have a number of amateurs who make those cyclotrons too. And number of people, students of high school, who made them for the high school. And one of the institutions is a Houghton College, which is H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N, in the middle of nowhere. They're in 1 Woodward Avenue, out in New York, and that's approximately 300 miles from New York City, and that's towards Buffalo. Then we have another one, and another one is New Jersey, in Newark. Close to Newark. It is in Houghton College, H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. Oh no, this one is in New York, but there is another one. What is the college? I'm trying to find it. That is... I lost it somewhere. But it's nearby Newark. And that one, I sent you the video. Let me just...
I have been hearing Wesley, by the way, Dick. W-S-1.
Very fine, Paul.
Yes. So, and also it's a number of amateurs who build those cyclotrons in their own basement. Usually it is said by one of the guys who, as an amateur, as an undergrad student, actually he was a high school student, he built a cyclotron, and then, because of that, he was rewarded to go to Switzerland and see the Dutch king and all of the royalty, and being able to see a Nobel Prize nomination. And then, after that, he actually made one for his local college. So now, this guy is in his own business, and he don't do cyclotron, but one of the things about the cyclotron is it is being used for all of the medical the radioactive material for medical use. One of them is in
Canada.
One of them is in Europe. There are only 3 or 4 locations, but the short life of those isotopes is sometimes 2 hours, I think. Sometimes 2 hours, and there is a time rush, because you have to first produce that, and then if you have the 6 hours, and then you must go to the patient, to the hospital in New York, you have to really speed it up. So how do they make those isotopes easy? Because what happens, you accelerate particles, you actually smash them. And based on what you're smashing them, you create an isotope. And usually technetium is being done the same, but they, there are a few others, but since Paul was able to look at this material, I would like Paul to say a few words. Also, I had a discussion with John, so guys, I'm listening. It's great to hear.
You've got a Paul.
Dick, I didn't hear Paul say he read it. Did you hear him say he read the material?
Well, I have heard Paul very well a while ago, and I understood that he was able to read that material.
Net, tonight at 8 o'clock, WQVL, repeater system. Net, time complete.
Enter it again. Okay, it looks like Paul is not with us. The information is, Dr. Ernest Lawrence was in 1929 the one who came across the German paper written by Germans that was explaining genetic composite transformation. And that apparatus used a glass tube with an iron source and connected to an oscillator and a flexion plate. And with that apparatus, he was able to accelerate particles. And then somewhere in 1932, actually that was before, because we didn't talk about something else. There is a when you have a 10 to minus 7 ratio in the chamber, and then you introduce the hydrogen into it. And then hydrogen could create few forms of few particles that are pretty interesting that we could use. One of them would be a protium, which would be hydrogen 1, so that would be one proton and one electron. The other one would be deuterium, which would be one proton, one neutron, one... and the third one would be tritium. And the tritium is blamed for eventually to be able to produce electricity, which was done in the United States in the 60s and 50s, and of a sudden the plan was shut down. Let me drop. Okay, one. Okay, fine. So when you pump the air out of the chamber, and then you have only two pieces of the D-shaped metal inside, then you have a space in between the space. You have an ion source. It could be anything. It could be any tungsten as well, whatever you want. It could be uranium as well, whatever you want. And then you speed up in a circular way. The efficiency of the cyclotron is much greater than the efficiency of a hydrogen collider or any kind of linear collider. And then when we're talking about cyclotron, which would be the big, huge hydrogen collider or any kind of the big collider, it is something that gets blow from the small cyclotron. And a cyclotron could be 4.5 inches deep, and that would work the first cyclotron that was built ever. In somewhere 1932, a 11-inch magnet was built, and the new chamber and the oscillator was implemented. And in 1932, protons were accelerated. And of course, when we talk about the proton acceleration, now we're talking about moving mass, and now we're talking about radiation. Because when you're trying to move the mass, or you're trying to eventually try to stretch the particles to the parts of the particles, and if it's only the part of the particles to be accelerated, then what you're doing is
you're creating a breaking of the nuclear bond. And by breaking of the nuclear bond, you have a whole variety of different radioactivity. But
timeout. W2KPQ. W2KPQ connected. N2XJN.
Okay, I'm back. Okay, so one of the questions was, and I include that in the email, in the cyclotron, what are the D's are enclosed in the vacuum? The D's in the cyclotron need to be in a vacuum to keep the accelerated particles from climbing into atoms and molecules in air. So we try to run the pumping of the air out of the accelerator assembly. Let's say we try to keep that air in, simply wouldn't work. But what would we do, it would create kind of radioactive ionized material trying to detect. It shows you will have acceleration total, but that thing would act as a radiation source with all of the material that was used on. Anyhow, I found it interesting because when I was looking at the Coleman problem that I'm working on it, even though that there was no vacuum over here, we had those two electromagnets that are essential for the cyclotron. And just what I'm trying right now to find out is if there is any connection between two. Big facility. Looks like Dick is not with us.
Looks like Dick is not.
Okay. So maybe I can say a few words. In the email that I have sent to Bernie as well, there is complete video. And that video shows Roger, R-U-T-G-E-R-S, New Jersey. Roger's college, the Rogers University, I don't know. Hold on. The Rogers University. It shows all complete a cyclotron that was made for the purpose of education and also for the purpose of research. And that was done by a group of students and also one professor. And if I'm not mistaken, they improved the build at 2001, and right now students could use it. There was plenty of safety devices that were foreseen for so the students are pretty much safe with it. But it's a small working cyclotron, I believe. They need to go to the touring. So if somebody is interested, they would be able to see that. And to make clear.
That's Rutgers University.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Wes, do you believe Rutgers is still using their cyclotron?
It's not only using, it's one of the standard toys for the students to play with. And actually, that video was made, I believe, last year. And there is a professor of the year who, as a student, built also a cycle problem. And then later on, with a group of the students, graduate students, I'm going to give you a little quote in here. What it says in here, that they have their own page. So if you go in, or you Google Roger Cyclotron, Roger, or R-U-T-G-E-R-S, Cyclotron. What it says is, the Rogers, and they have a beautiful explanation, including maps, including every possible element. And also the video that shows every possible element. Let me drop and come back. 1, 2.
1, 2.
Okay. So what they say, the Rogers 12-inch cyclotron is an accelerator capable of producing 1 million electron volts So we're talking about moving particles. It's beautiful. Is both teaching tool and the research and development platform. While it is now employed as teaching tool in modern physics lab courses in regular universities, the 12-inch cyclotron project began as personal pursuit for two Rutgers undergraduate students in 1995, Tim Collett and Stu Hanbuch. By 1999, the cyclotron construction was the focus of four senior cyclotron staff. The cyclotron was moved into the physics building in 2001 and incorporated into the modern physics teaching lab. Since the fall semester of 2001, students' projects have been contributing to the cyclotron operation and improvement. By spring 2006, the cyclotron was reliably producing 200 nanoamperes at 800 kiloelectronvolts photon beam. So now, in 2012, with the recent addition of the TID ion source, the cyclotron continually outruns its operators. Cyclotron operates smoothly, providing 10 of microamperes and beam time in excess of 10 hours without requiring any maintenance, like this job. Okay. The Rutgers 12-inch cyclotron project has given its students a working introduction to the field of accelerator physics. The principles of operation of the large accelerator are very similar. With this machine, the students can encounter many of the same futures, frustrations, and breakthroughs and accelerator physics might do at Fermilab at CERN. So we have done our best to make this experience available to work through this webpage, and they have a webpage. And this webpage, they have everything. And there are also a number of groups, and some people also are involved in some of them having a cyclotron in their own basement. That's what they do. So it's a fascinating subject, and there was a problem in 2006 when a Canadian reactor had to be shut down. Okay. And there was a worldwide shortage of medical usables and radioactive treatments that are being used in Pakistan or Kyrgyzstan or many other applications. Whatever the name you use for it, they all operate on one single principle. The patient is being injected with a short, large isotope. Some of them live 1 hour, 3 hours, 6 hours, or even longer. And then gamma camera is injured in stationary position, giving a planar image. We're not talking about the glass, we're talking about